Welcome on board a daily adventure to discover true wisdom, authentic hope, a stronger faith, and profound joy. Yeah. Yeah. Hey. This is the Debbie Chavez Show.
You're the shining star, no matter who you are. Shining bright to see, what you can truly be, what you can truly be.
Welcome, friends and neighbors. Delightful to be with you once again as we journey through this life together toward hope, wisdom, and joy. Now, just ahead, we're going to be talking mainly to all the men out there, but all the ladies will benefit from this as well. We're going to be talking with a guy who, some of you will recognize this guy's name. He is really, really prominent in terms of restoring antique classic cars. He has one of the biggest auction houses out there, just kind of a mover and shaker in that whole world of classic cars that have been restored and such. Anyway, he is going to share with us the keys to restoring satisfaction and authenticity in your life so that you move from being miserable and weak and bored into something that's, joyful, dynamic, passion-filled, purposeful. Doesn't that sound much better as a contrasting kind of thing? That'll be coming up in just a moment. Toward the end of the hour in the Something You Should Know file, a new survey reveals how American teens view oral sex. I mean, is it really sex in their minds? Also, Sarah Palin's daughter speaks out about teen sex in a new PSA for television. And the Wall Street Journal examines the prevalence of ADHD in American adults. So all those stories coming up toward the end of the hour in the Something You Should Know file. But we always start on the lighter side with our wild, wacky, and wonderful stories of the day. Well, first in the wild category, here's a little quiz for you. What percentage of people around the world actually believe that aliens exist and that they live in our midst disguised as humans? What do you think? What percentage of people around the world? Answer, 20% of all people worldwide think that aliens are really posing as humans among us. Oh my goodness. The Reuters ISPOS poll of 23,000 adults in 22 different countries showed that more than 40% of people from India and China believe that aliens walk among us disguised as humans. The countries least likely to think this, Belgium, Sweden, and the Netherlands. Also interesting, more men than women believe that alien beings are on Earth living among us. Also wild, it can traverse rough terrain, accelerate quickly, and negotiate sharp turns like other high-performance sports cars, but there's one thing that sets this Audi coupe apart. It doesn't need a driver. The car, named Shelly, is the latest creation by Stanford University researchers who are developing technology that could help make driving safer and one day allow ordinary vehicles to drive on their own. This self-driving car will face its biggest test this fall at Colorado's Pikes Peak. According to the researchers, what we're trying to do is create an autonomous race car, an autonomous rally car, so a car that can drive itself up to the very limits of handling is a possibility. Volkswagen AG, which makes Audi vehicles and is working with Stanford on the Shelly project, has set a goal of creating fully autonomous vehicles by the year 2028. Also wild, sometimes top government officials can be rather, well, how should I say this, clueless. For instance, Fox News has discovered that the United Nations is actually spending over $10 million to house some of its Haiti relief workers on a pair of luxury cruise ships, one of which has been dubbed the Love Boat by UN staff. The cost of leasing these cruise ships, $112,000 a day for UN relief workers to live in luxury while helping people in Haiti who don't even have food, shelter, drinking water, or anything else. I don't know. Also wacky, nothing apparently can stand in the way of a woman and her hair salon appointment. An 82-year-old woman who accidentally crashed her car through the front window of a Southwest Michigan salon stuck around afterward for her appointment to get her hair done, of course. Authorities say Marion Zock was parking her Ford Fusion on Thursday outside Classic Hair Design in near Grand Rapids when she stepped on the accelerator instead of the brake. Two people were injured when she slammed into the front window of the salon, including an employee who returned to work after treatment and a girl that suffered a bruised arm. Marion, that 82-year-old dear old lady, she just proceeded on with her hair appointment. You gotta get your hair done, right? All right, let's finish with a wonderful news story. I love it when someone refuses to compromise on their values. Today's example, Neil McDonough. He's a marvelous actor who elevates every role he plays in, whether it's in Band of Brothers or Desperate Housewives. So when he was suddenly replaced with David James Elliott 3 days into the filming on ABC's new series Scoundrels earlier this week, you knew there had to be a story behind the story. The move was officially explained as a casting change, but in fact, McDonough was sacked because of his refusal to do some heated love scenes with actress Virginia Madsen. The reason? He says he's a family man and a Catholic, and he's always made it clear that he will not do steamy sex scenes, and ABC knew that because he also didn't get into action with Nicolette Sheridan on the network's Desperate Housewives when he played her psycho husband during season 5, and he also didn't do love scenes with his on-air girlfriend in his previous series, NBC's Boomtown, or that network's medical investigation. It has cost him jobs, but you know, you can't help but admire McDonough for sticking to his beliefs, even if he's poised to lose as much as $1 million in paydays for Scoundrels. So kudos to him for sticking to his values. I love that. And that's a look at our wild, wacky, and wonderful stories of the day. Well, time now to welcome to our program owner of the world's largest collector car sales organization, as well as author and speaker, Mitch Cruz. Hi there, Mitch.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Excellent. You have written a book called Restoration Road, The Master Key to a New and Satisfied Life of Authenticity. And before we get into your personal story, because I want to let you tell your own story a little bit, it's so inspirational, of the tough lessons you learned and such. But before we get there, in your subtitle for the book, you talk about this satisfied life of authenticity, which kind of begs the question, do you think it's really impossible to have a satisfied life if you are not living authentically?
Oh, absolutely. We have to be restored to the authentic design that Christ has for each one of our lives. And it's not going to happen unless we fully surrender our hearts and our desires and our life to Him.
Yeah, and so many of us, as you make the case early on in the book, so many of us live in this kind of facade little thing we've constructed. I think you call it pretense in the book. And you give a little bit of a definition of how when we're living this life of pretense, you say it misaligns our lives from the outside in, and then authenticity aligns our lives from the inside out. Can you explain that?
Sure. Every one of us really gets the idea of the need for restoration. And so we all make these self-restoration attempts from the outside in. We think that if we go somewhere and do something that we will become somebody. Mm. And we really focus on the outside, on fixing up the outside. And all the while we're just dying on the inside. Jesus told the Pharisees in Matthew 23, he said, you know, you restore yourselves on the outside, but inside you're dead.
Yes.
And you're dying inside, and it's just pretense. It's just pretending. It's just acting. Yeah. And so what God wants to do is come right back to the core of our lives from our heart. And when we fully surrender and humble our hearts to Him, then He begins to align our lives from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Who we are to be in Christ determines what we are to do in Christ.
Yeah.
Which determines where we are to go in Christ.
And so maybe this is why some people who are at the pinnacle of their career or they accomplish their dream of, maybe it's a woman who is listening, who accomplished her dream of finding the right husband and having the 2.5 kids and has the nice house with the picket fence, and yet still feels kind of like empty, or a guy, again, who's reached the pinnacle of their career and they've got the beautiful wife and the kids, and but something just seems missing. Is it that piece, you think?
Yes, my experience has been that it's not the wonderful husband and it's not the 2.5 children that are wrong. It's that she was looking for satisfaction of her desires from the outside in. Mm-hmm. And put all that pressure on the husband or on the kids to be the satisfaction of that desires. But only Christ will satisfy her desires, and then Christ in her will bring that satisfaction to those relationships.
Ooh, that was really well said, and that resonates, I think, with a lot of us, because we do tend to, even subconsciously, think our spouse should be making us happy, and our kids should be making me happy, and my job, I should be happy, and you're right, we put a lot of pressure on these people, places, and things to bring us happiness, and it's a dead end. So let's get to your personal story, which you tell throughout the book, Restoration Road. You're a second-generation car restorer enthusiast, correct?
Actually third. I'm a third-generation auctioneer, but I couldn't restore a car to save my life. I'm not mechanically inclined. Nobody would want me to touch it, but I did auction the world's greatest classic cars all over the world for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm, a passion of yours. But tell us your personal story of, you know, climbing the career ladder, if you will, and what you found out?
Well, my grandfather started the auction business in 1952. My great-grandfather, his father-in-law, saw that his farm had flooded, and he said, you know, the farming thing doesn't work out about once every 7 years or so. You might want to become an auctioneer. He had a little bit of background experience in that. And my grandfather did, and then in 1959, my dad got involved his senior year in high school. And then in the 60s, they pioneered selling multiple parcels of real estate at auction, at one auction, kind of a thing like a consignment auction. And then in 1971, my life was changed forever. I live in Auburn, Indiana, where they made the Auburns, Cords, Duesenbergs, and about 14 other makes of automobiles. In fact, at one time, there were more different kinds of automobiles made in Auburn than in Detroit.
Really?
Yeah. So the Chamber of Commerce came to my grandfather and said, we're losing money every year on this little reunion of these Auburns, Cords, and Duesenbergs. You got any ideas for a fundraiser? And he said, why don't we have an auction? They all got for sale signs in them parked around the courthouse square after the parade. Let's just try it. And 15,000 people came in a field under a tent to watch 75 cars auctioned. And a man turned down $50,000 for his Duesenberg, and at that time, most of them would sell for less than $5,000. So NBC National News closed their segment that night that two fools met in Auburn, Indiana. Well, I was 6 years old carrying clerk sheets from the auction to my mom in the cashier's office. And my dad then built that collector car auction business. And then when I was a freshman in, actually back then in junior high, my dad experienced a huge economic loss. He ended up buying his brothers and his dad out for a dollar each and had no idea how he was going to survive. And that's where I started to think about, hey, what am I really going to do with my life?
Yeah.
And I had to decide my senior year of high school whether I was going to play college basketball or try to do something to help my dad, and I chose to go to Indiana University in Fort Wayne and start. I started to sell cars, classic cars. I started to sell real estate. I became the youngest realtor and the youngest auctioneer in the nation, and I sold the first car ever for $1 million cash.
Wow.
And I started a new company my senior year in college to kind of restore the Cruise auction business, and it just went straight up until about July 1st, 1990. It went straight down.
And let's pause right here and let you tell the rest of that story. I mean, because here you are. I mean, you like you said, went straight up, you know, skyrocket up in your career. Everything is rosy. And then all of a sudden, kaboom. So we'll find out what caused it to go kaboom. And then what lessons you discovered at the bottom of the pit that you're going to relate to the rest of us. My guest today, Mitch Cruise. He's owner of the world's largest collector car sales organization. And he's an author of the new book, Restoration Road.
There's more to talk radio than politics. The Debbie Chavez Show, your source of hope and wisdom for all of life's challenges.
Do you want to discover the heart of your child and who God created them to be? Laugh Your Way America is excited to introduce the Kids Flag Page. This fun and interactive game will help you discover the unique way God wired your child. Find the key things that motivate them and learn what they love most about life. This colorful and engaging activity set will help your child see who they are at their very best and will teach you how to bring out the best in your child. Each Kids Flag Page game comes with everything you need to complete 3 Kids Flag Pages. Designed for children ages 4 to 11, the Kids Flag Page is a fun way for moms and dads to interact with their kids and truly discover the heart of each child. To order your game, go to www.laughyourway.com. That's laughyourway.com.
Looking to try something new for dinner? Something to bring the whole family together that everyone will enjoy? Visit Hemplers.com for some great dinner ideas, like sausage jambalaya, easy ham recipes, and some satisfying soup suggestions. Hemplers Meats is a family-owned business on a mission to provide top-quality selections of ham, bacon, and sausage, made with no fillers and flavored with natural spices. And now with a complete line of nitrate-free products. For more information and where to purchase Hemplers Meats, go to Hemplers.com.
Choosing a monument for a loved one who's passed away begins with telling their unique story. A story about your loved one, their faith and beliefs, their family heritage, their legacy. Cascade Monuments can help you select a monument design that's as one-of-a-kind as they were. And Cascade Monuments provides quality memorials and markers beautifully designed by a family-owned business that is 100 years old. Visit Cascade Monuments on the web at cascademonuments.com. Back on the program with Mitch Cruz, his new book, Restoration Road, The Master Key to a New and Satisfied Life of Authenticity. Okay, so you told us you were just a young, budding entrepreneur. Everything is going rosy. You're selling cars for millions of dollars. And then everything came crashing down. So pick us up at that part of the story.
Well, it was about the beginning of a 24-month cycle of we were in a mild economic recession. And on July 1st, 1992, after a very bad day and having no idea how I was going to make payroll and millions of dollars in debt, I realized that I had been repeating the generation before me. Mm-hmm. And I found myself on my knees beside my bed that night and said to God, I can't do this on my own. And for the first time in my life, I really believed that circumstances could be beyond my control. Mm-hmm. And I pictured myself moving out of the pilot seat and into the co-pilot seat, and I pictured Christ moving into that pilot seat, and it began a unique journey for me. I stumbled into my attorney uncle's office the next day. He was my dad's brother, and I just knew I needed help. He was the most righteous, yet the most accepting person I knew. Mm-hmm. And I went up the back steps to an unfinished storage room lined with bookshelves all the way around with books that he had read, and in there I confessed my sins, and I was asked a question that changed my life forever.
Okay, said, and what was that question?
He said, Mitchell, have you ever thought about changing the scorecard of your life from money to wisdom? Ooh. And now that I didn't have any money, I was wide open to anything. But growing up, going to church three times a week, I really wasn't sure what he meant. And he defined it like this. He said, wisdom is God's heart or God's righteousness combined with street smarts. Mm. And looking back on that, I see how that was a picture of those bookshelves, the vertical intersecting with the horizontal, the vertical, God's heart, my relationship with God, and the horizontal, the street smarts and my relationship with others, that I had to live in that sweet spot. And Proverbs 1:7 and Proverbs 9:10 says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and what that is humility toward the person of God, or that will never happen. We'll never see the wisdom. So just like what was going on in the physical, to bend my knees, to go up those steps where the vertical intersected with the horizontal with those bookshelves. So I was bending the knees of my heart to the God of the universe to experience wisdom now to be the means and the end of restoration in my life.
And we're going to hear the end of that story, bringing it up to current day here in just a minute. But I want to spend some time in this important lesson stage for you, because it's going to be important for us as well. You talk about learning that there are, I think, five kinds of fools that the Bible really outlines for us, which, of course, no one wants to consider themselves a fool. But, I mean, let's get real here. So can you tell us what our foolishness might look like in these five different ways?
Sure. We start as, kind of give the whole picture up front, it starts as wet cement, kind of sand and stone, and then it becomes hardened, cured concrete. And we go from gullible through the last stage, which is godless. So this first stage of gullibility, I'll use S words, is the simple fool. And he's just gullible. It's interesting that God calls us to not be gullible, you know?
Ooh.
And then the next stage is stupid. It's just a little bit harder. And all the stupid fool is one who repeats the gullible behavior.
Yeah, the definition of insanity, basically, right? Just repeating the same stupid things over and over again and saying, why does this keep happening to me?
Exactly, and expecting different results. And so our heart gets a little harder, and we become stubborn. Ooh. Now, we can probably all relate to this, where we're immovable in our opinions.
Yes.
And, you know, that happened to me. I started to get more stubborn in how I was approaching people. I thought I was always right in my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next level of hardness is the scorning fool. We begin to mock others, and we even start to fool around with mocking God.
Ooh.
And that leads us to the final stage, which is the secular fool or the godless fool.
Mm.
And I put my faith on a shelf.
Mm.
And I became the restorer in my own life, and it left me unrestored and dissatisfied.
Mm.
And having to deal with this, these foolish choices that I had made in my life, really was almost painful, because I was a recovering perfectionist. And I thought, gosh, I am not the guy my mother raised.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just couldn't believe how little by little my heart had hardened more and more.
Mm. And so you discovered, as you say in the book, that pride is the lock on the human heart and humility is the key. So does it all come down to this business of humbling ourselves?
It does, and I find that when I talk about this, somebody will say, well, man, what is humility, all that? And they start thinking about self-deprecating comments and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, humility is a soft heart toward God. It's bending the knees of my heart. There's always an object in humility toward the God of the universe. And then humility toward God gets fleshed out in humility toward others, and it allows us to experience authenticity, God's unique design for our life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, from this point, we're going to let you tell the rest of your story in just a moment here, and we're also going to have you explain, you say that just like the physical heart is comprised of four chambers, that the spiritual heart is also comprised of four chambers. So we're going to learn about that and basically how we can maybe restore those spiritual chambers of our heart and really find that authenticity that you've been talking about that seems so elusive. My guest is Mitch Cruz, if that name sounds familiar. He's the owner of the world's largest collector car sales organization, as well as an author and speaker. And he is out with a brand new book called Restoration Road, the master key to a new and satisfied life of authenticity. We shall return with my guest Mitch. Easy for me to say, my guest Mitch, in just a moment.
Spreading the fragrance of a rich spiritual life around the globe. This is the Debbie Chavez Show, heard every weekday by people all over the world at DebbieChavez.com.
Years ago, if you weren't fortunate enough to get braces as a child, you ended up living with crooked teeth the rest of your life. But that doesn't have to be the case anymore. Gain a whole new wonderful smile through cosmetic dentistry at Northside Dental Care in Bellingham. Dr. Eric McRory gave me the look I've always wanted. Now I can smile wide without embarrassment. Check out the cosmetic dentistry of Northside Dental Care yourself. Visit their website by clicking on their logo on the front page of DebbieChavez.com and then click on Smile Gallery. You're going to be impressed.
Mark Unger is launching a women's event unlike any other, designed to teach women how to be strong, confident, respectful women.
This is going to be a conference like no other conference that you've ever been to. We're not just going to have a bunch of women all sitting around crying. We're going to show you how to succeed in life.
Coming to Green Bay April 30th and May 1st. Details and tickets are available at buttkickingwomen.com.
Many problems facing Whatcom County families stem from an absent dad in the home, or a dad who is unable to lead his family with integrity because of challenges such as alcohol, drugs, pornography, anger, and gambling. That's where the nonprofit group called Bellingham Band of Brothers steps in. Band of Brothers provides a safe weekly meeting place for men from all walks of life to gather for a free meal, practical assistance, and spiritual instruction. For more information, visit bellinghambob.org. That's bellinghambob.org.
With spring in the air, maybe you're starting to think about that remodeling project. Well, Bodie's Electric and Plumbing can help you with pretty much anything electrical or plumbing that you need. Whether you're thinking of replacing your light fixtures, maybe you're tired of seeing money run down the drain because you have to wait for the hot water to finally get to the faucet. Bodie's can deal with all of that stuff. Maybe you're finally getting that hot tub you've been saving for and need help with the wiring. Give Bodie's Electric and Plumbing a call. They can help. Serving all of Whatcom County 24/7, Bodie's Electric and Plumbing.
On the program with Mitch Cruz, his book Restoration Road. In the book, you talk about these four chambers of our heart, and that if we can humble, it sounds like, each chamber of our spiritual heart to God, that's where we're going to see our lives turn around. So tell us what these four spiritual chambers are.
Well, we can remember them in the acronym WISE, W-I-S-E, and first chamber that we'll talk about is the will. It's the chamber of our choices. The second chamber is the intellect or the mind. It's the chamber of our thoughts. The third is the spirit, the lead chamber of our prayers. And then the fourth chamber is the chamber of our emotions, representing the chamber of our feelings. So to humble ourselves to God or to Christ, we have to choose to, think to, pray to, and want to.
Mm.
And that was a big shift for me to do that in all areas of life. And the more I humbled myself to God, the more He gave me the heart of Christ, and the more that was fleshed out then horizontally in relationships.
Yeah, and I remember reading somewhere in your book that you learned to, anytime you were just going to be in a phone conversation with someone, something basic, that you would actually pause for 5 seconds and ask God, you know, what do you want me to do?
Exactly. I did the 5-second rule, and before I would pick up the phone, before I would encounter somebody, I would say, God, what do you want me to do? Bill Hybel says that the difference of being spirit-led or not is 5 seconds.
Yeah, really? You know, that's true. Oh, my goodness.
Just doing that. But then I tried the 5-minute rule to be 5 minutes early to every appointment, and that didn't work very well for me.
Oh, dear. You also made this interesting statement in the book. You say we should ask ourselves, what God am I white-knuckling? Can you explain that?
Yeah, because in order to humble ourselves to Christ, we need to let go of whatever we're white-knuckling in our lives that might be an idol or a false god.
Mm-hmm.
And God, through Joshua, communicated this to the Israelites, and we got to, you know, let go of something. And whoever's listening today, there's probably something in your life that you're white-knuckling and you're holding on to. Mm-hmm. And God says in Deuteronomy 15 that a hard heart and a tight fist go together. But a soft heart and an open hand are synonymous.
Mm-hmm. And so you said in the book it could be money, our pursuit of money, that's our God that we're white-knuckling, or it could be an illicit relationship that you know you shouldn't be doing, or improper use of the internet, or a career, or anything. So I think that probably resonates in some area with all of us. So get to the rest of your story. So you kind of hit rock bottom. You finally reach out to God and realize you've got to humble yourself to God in all these different areas. What happened next?
Well, I began to have this thirst for the Word of God, because I realized that I had been looking at myself either through the clouded glasses, I'll call them, or perspective of my own, you know, my own perspective, or the clouded glasses of other people's perspective. And I realized that I needed to start looking at myself through God's crystal clear 2020 vision.
Mm.
In order to do that, to understand that, I began to devour the Bible. And even to this day, I'll read through it over the course of a year. And the more I got into the Word, the more the Word got into me. And it got into my marketing of my business. It got into the relationships of my business. And I found out that a world flocks to an organization who will put the customer's needs ahead of their own.
Ooh.
And God just totally transformed my relationships and my business, everything that I had been holding back. And it was amazing how that pursuit of wisdom brought that restoration to my life. And then in about 1999, I had felt a prompting from God after, I believe, He spared me from a car accident, that He wanted me to become a carrier of this message of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
And He basically popped eBay out of the sky. And because of their intent for our business, they wanted to take our 450,000 customer list and make them customers of their own for automobiles.
Hmm.
They didn't care as much about my 52 live auctions a year, but they were willing for me to step away. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, God made a way that I could have never made for myself. And mm-hmm. I went on to earn my master's and doctorate, and then volunteered as a teaching pastor for about 5 years at a local church. And today I'm just trying to be a carrier of the message of restoration.
I love the way you put it toward the end of the book. You said, I was reminded that God had taken me from pursuing the rich for my benefit to pursuing the poor for their benefit.
Yeah, God started blowing attics inside the door at the church where I was serving and teaching the Bible. And I understood that they got surrender. They were just surrendering in the wrong place, and they understood that. And so we started baptizing hundreds. Well, we had done an outreach concert with Tommy Walker, And his manager became a really good friend of mine, and they were running a really quite a ministry out of their church. And he called me up one day and said, "Hey, would you like to make a film? We'll go to Manila. There's 60,000 people living in a landfill, and there's been a little outreach started there, and we'd like to go be there for a week and encounter the kids. The kids are surrendering their lives to Christ, and they're evangelizing the parents." So we went there, and we spent about a week with them, and the kids were amazing, and we had a couple nights of an outreach event where I taught, and the music was just incredible, the team that went with us. And basically, if they came, they surrendered their lives to Christ, and it was amazing. And through that effort, we raised scholarships so that those kids could get on jitneys and go to a beautiful Christian school outside the dump, and it's changing their lives, and they're becoming carriers of restoration.
And I have to ask this question, and actually you allude to this in the book. Some people might now be thinking, okay, so in other words, we have to humble ourselves to God, get rid of all of our desires. Well, this is just going to be a boring life where I won't find any happiness or contentment. But that's not true at all, is it? Because you actually talk about how God has given us four really great desires that he wants us to pursue. Can you tell us about those four God-given desires?
Sure. Two S words, two C words. And this is in Genesis 1:27-30. God gave us the first desire, significance, by being created in his image. He gave us the desire for security by giving us. We were given every seed-bearing plant, every fruit-bearing tree. The two C words are, he gave us control. It's called the Dominion Covenant, by saying, "You rule over the earth." And he gave us this desire for contentment. It says that God blessed them and asked them to be fruitful, multiply. He told them to subdue the earth. Subdue in Hebrew is kibosh. We've made it a negative word. He put the kibosh on that.
Yes.
But it's actually a positive word. It means to bring contentment to the earth, to be content enough to multiply generously. And I really believe that the first sin is pride, and it's pursuing the satisfaction of those four desires apart from God. And the irony is that the more we do that, the more dissatisfied we become, the more insignificant, the more insecure, the more out of control, the more discontent.
Yeah, and what's kind of interesting about some of these words that you've used, I'll just pick on one, significance. Sometimes I think Christians have been led to believe that it's wrong to want to be significant, because that would almost be prideful or something. So give us the subtle difference in looking at that word the way you think God intended.
Well, I just had a discussion this morning with a college student who's pursuing, recognizes that she's pursuing significance in her sports achievements and in her academic achievements and in some relationships. But the problem is, when she does that, the more insignificant she feels when they don't go her way, because it's all depending on her. And then when things are really good, it's back to all depending on her. Well, we're talking about doing a 180 and having it all depend on Christ. And I talked with her about whether she is successful, makes a wonderful hit, or she is unsuccessful for the moment, you know, strikes out, pops out, makes an error, that both those opportunities give her the ability to give glory to God, to encourage her teammates, to be who God's designed her to be, and so she can win in all circumstances. And she's experiencing that by having her significance found in the love, the unmerited favor, the grace of God. And that's just one little way on how that is just a 180 from how we normally pursue it.
And let's tackle another one, because I think this is really a fascinating discussion, the subtle different perspectives on these words, if you will. You mentioned that God has given us a God-given desire for control, and yet that word certainly can also be disputed by some Christians who would say, oh my goodness, no, we're not supposed to be in control of anything. God controls everything. So show us your perspective on that one.
Well, the more we pursue control apart from God, the more out of control our lives become. That's been my experience, both, you know, with my own life and as a teaching pastor and trying to help people. But the control that God wants us to have comes from when we humble our hearts to him and we experience Christ, the power of God. When I am weak, then I am strong. And we want the power of God through us. And what's powerful is God's heart in us impacting others for Christ and his kingdom. And we need to, as John the Baptist said, which he might have had a historical context to this, but I think it's also indicative of his heart, he said, "I must decrease, he must increase. And that's what happens. And then there's great power that goes down in the invisible and the visible when we yield our hearts and our desire for control apart from God to God. And then he's actually, and it's real simple. It's spirit-led, you know, to be spirit-led, the fruit of the spirit. And that's what happens.
And one last point here. You say in the book, to restore our time and our talents and our treasures, we really have to submit those things to God. And submitting our treasures to God, some of us are, you know, we have an ironclad grip on our wallets, right?
We do. I think it was Wesley who said the last thing to get converted is the wallet.
Yes, yes.
And I realized that anybody who mismanages their treasures is probably mismanaging their time and their talent as well. They're all three interwoven. So we really need to let go of those and surrender those to Christ, and he will use those then to advance his kingdom. It doesn't mean you can't own a nice car or a nice home. It's what you will do with those to advance the kingdom of God.
Nice. Mitch, thank you so much for sharing your own story with us. Really inspirational. And many blessings to you in your current work as you're really doing a pastoring of the flock out there.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And we'd like to make several copies of his book available at no cost. If you would like to receive one in the mail, go ahead and email us at lynn@debbychavez.com. And by the way, Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N-E. And then request the book Restoration Road by Mitch Cruz. I think you will enjoy it. Back in a moment with our Something You Should Know file. First, a new survey reveals how American teens view oral sex. You know, in other words, is it really sex in their minds? Also, Sarah Palin's daughter speaks out about teen sex in a new PSA for television. And the Wall Street Journal examines the prevalence of ADHD in American adults. All those stories come your way next.
If you've been blessed by this talk show, please consider making a donation to our nonprofit organization called Great Awakening Productions. For more information, click on the donate button at debbychavez.com.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master?
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the karate glove. And I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
Chop wood, concrete, trees. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Hi-ya! Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Back on the program with our Something You Should Know file. Well, first, how would you think teens would answer this question? What is sex? I think you have that answer down, Pat. Well, if you have a teen or college-aged child, you might want to ask them what they think about this. WebMD is reporting that most young adults in America agree that actual intercourse is sex, but less than 1 in 5 think that oral contact, oral sex, is actually having sex, according to a 2007 survey of undergraduate college students. This attitude toward oral sex represents a dramatic and sudden shift in thinking since 1991, when an exactly, you know, samely worded survey found that nearly twice as many young adults back then would classify oral sex as actual sex. Back then, 40% said that was true sex. Now, again, only 20%. Researchers point to former President Clinton's infamous statement, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," as the pivotal turning point in society's changing views about oral sex. The attitude shift has been actually dubbed the Clinton-Lewinsky effect by experts. Now, the survey involved about 500 undergraduate students. They were enrolled in a human sexuality class, and they were asked the following question. Would you say you, quote, had sex with someone if the most intimate behavior you engaged in was, and then they offered 11 different scenarios ranging from actual intercourse to oral sex to simple fondling. Among the survey's notable findings, only 20% of those surveyed said oral sex would actually constitute sex, and less than 20% of participants considered anal sex as sex at all. Isn't that weird? These findings are of great concern for many reasons, including health. Experts say oral genital contact can lead to sexually transmitted diseases. Such diseases include HIV, herpes, syphilis, gonorrhea, HPV, which has been linked to cervical cancer. So you might want to educate your kids and have a good talk about that. Well, speaking of sexually active teenagers, the Christian Post reports Bristol Palin is warning girls in a new teen pregnancy ad to think about the consequences of sexual activities before engaging in them. In a public service announcement for the Candies Foundation, the 19-year-old mother asks a series of questions, including, what if I didn't come from a famous family? What if I didn't have all their support? What if I didn't have all these opportunities? In zooming out, the camera shot reveals a nearly unfurnished room, Palin in a t-shirt and jeans, her son Tripp with only a diaper and white shirt on. Believe me, it wouldn't be pretty, says Palin. Pause before you play, she warns. Palin, of course, the daughter of former Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, was in the media spotlight and the subject of much discussion during the 2008 presidential campaign after it was made known that she was unwed and a pregnant teenager. In an interview with ABC's Good Morning America last May, Palin said abstinence is the best and only way to prevent pregnancy. And while not easy, Palin said she believes abstinence is realistic. The teen reiterated her stance on abstinence recently with the Associated Press. In that interview, Palin said if girls knew how hard it is to be a mom, they would think twice before having sex. As for herself, Palin said she has decided to practice abstinence until marriage after her own experience being a teen mom. In her words, I don't think anyone realizes how difficult it really is until you actually have a screaming baby in your arms and you're up all night. Yeah. All right, next, the Wall Street Journal is carrying quite an in-depth story on the prevalence of ADHD in adults. It's really quite interesting. So how do you know you have ADHD, which experts compare to having a mind like a pinball with thoughts flitting in multiple directions? Maybe you're just overcaffeinated or overworked. And if you have to do it, you know, and say that you have ADHD, will there be a stigma? Would medication work? Should you try it? Well, parents of children with suspected ADHD face a myriad of similar questions, but the concerns can be just as troubling for adults whose ADHD often goes unrecognized. An estimated 8% of U.S. children have ADHD, which is also known as ADD, for attention deficit disorder. Some 50% of kids outgrow it, according to government data. I had not heard that, which is good news. And about 4.4% of all U.S. adults, which would be about 10 million adults, are estimated to also have ADHD. Less than one quarter of them are aware of it, according to the experts. That's because while ADHD always starts in childhood, according to official diagnostic criteria, many adults with the disorder went unnoticed when they were young, and it's only been since the 1980s that therapists even recognized the disorder could persist in adults. So getting an accurate diagnosis can be tricky. Some experts think that too many adults and children are being put on medication, often by doctors with little experience with the disorder. Others think that many more people could benefit from ADHD drugs and behavioral therapy. And again, according to this Wall Street Journal report, could be about 10 million U.S. adults who have this, and many of them are not aware of it. Now, complicating the picture further, ADHD frequently goes hand in hand with depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder, and it can be difficult to untangle which came first. According to the experts, it's very common for someone to be treated for depression or anxiety for years and have the therapist not notice the ADHD, but adults whose ADHD is left untreated face a high incidence of substance abuse, auto accidents, difficulty staying employed and maintaining relationships. They said some adults with ADHD are highly intelligent, energetic, charismatic, creative. Some are able to focus intently on a narrow range of topics that really interest them. Generally, though, ADHD can make life very difficult. It's thought to be an imbalance in neurotransmitters, which are the chemical messengers that relay signals in the brain, particularly in the frontal cortex that governs planning and impulse control. Children with a disorder, particularly boys, are likely to be hyperactive with an intense need to move constantly, which can, of course, interfere with learning in the classroom. Girls tend to be talkative and dreamy, but they're often overlooked because they usually aren't as disruptive. Adults, more typically, have trouble with paying attention, focusing, and prioritizing. Managing their time and money are particularly difficult for ADHD adults. Now, some people with ADHD are able to compensate for their distractibility, at least for a while. Some excel in school early on, but then run into problems once they get to college or get a job where they have to stay organized on their own. As with other psychiatric conditions, there is no blood test or brain scan that can diagnose ADHD. Experts say people who suspect they have it should go through a thorough evaluation, ideally with a psychologist or psychiatrist who specializes in the disorder. And then, of course, there is a medication as a possibility, behavioral therapy as a possibility, but get in touch with your doctors and psychologists and such and see which might work best for you. Well, let's move to our healthy recipe of the day. I absolutely love macaroni and cheese. Does anybody else have a particular passion for that? Well, this is a makeover recipe, so you don't have to feel so guilty. It's a light mac and cheese with reduced fat cheddar, fat-free evaporated milk, some low-fat cottage cheese blended in there, a little dab of Dijon mustard, 225 calories per serving, just 4 grams of saturated fat, and that recipe is available for you right now on the healthy recipe tab of the website at debbychavez.com. Have a great weekend. And may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in Him.